not a sprain or an itch. Pain that's swelling, a twitch. Call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky. I call up and ask me, Dr. Lasky.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. The Hey Doc Show presents its 1,000th episode on the coronavirus COVID-19 pandemic. Well, maybe not quite. Probably more like the 12th show featuring the prevention, diagnosis, and treatment of the viral infection affecting every country worldwide, at least to some degree, with the country most affected being the United States.
The adult population of the U.S. is around 250 million, about three-quarters of the total population. Of these, almost 2 million were sick enough to be treated for the virus, with the total death now around 113,000.
So, taking this into consideration, the chance of someone dying from the virus is about 0.05%, or about 5 deaths in every 10,000 people, or 1 in every 2,000 of our population that will actually succumb to this virus. The largest financial effect in the United States has been a decrease in sales by about 29%. This has a trickle-down effect. If sales decrease, then there's less money to pay employees, so jobs are lost.
Not only that, the domino effect here is horrible, since those who have lost jobs no longer are able to pay their bills or purchase items, further decreasing sales.
This often leads to problems with the stock market, where any recession has a further domino effect on business, and so on down the line. So when we hear about Jacksonville getting the Republican National Convention, at first we are most likely to applaud this until we hear the domino effect on our fellow Jacksonvillians. With profits in the millions that the city could glean from this convention, meaning increased sales both for products and services, it could be a real plus for the local economy, not just the government, but the citizenry as well.
But there are those that see the bittersweet of the deal and are worried about how this influx of people from around the country is going to affect us after everyone who has visited Jacksonville leaves.
Some will eventually leave the virus to others living here, and so this could cause an excess surge in COVID-19 infections along with increased COVID deaths.
It is most likely not going to be very useful to try to dissuade the powers that are, those that make the final decisions as to who visits and who doesn't. So we should all probably do our best to protect ourselves and our families during this time.
Whether you believe in the use of masks or not, we should all use the best masks that we can get. So if you listen to our last Hey Doc show, Carmen and I explained why pretty much all masks help. The bandana masks seem to prevent about 20% penetration, while these surgical types prevent about 80%. It's only the N95 masks that are truly 95% effective. However, even now, these are in short supply for the general population.
The farther we are from each other, the less chance of passing the virus to others, if we have it, and the less chance of getting the virus. It has been shown that the less virus that you get, the less severe is the infection and the symptoms that you have.
You know, I've seen many using the face shields, and this is good as well, as long as you use the face mask along with it. Hand washing and sanitizing objects that use and touch is also a good idea. And during the RNC, try to put all of these preventive measures into place. There will be many outsiders entering Jacksonville and the surrounding area days before the actual convention, and many will remain for days after. The less contact you have with them, the less likely you have to get the virus.
As the world works to produce an effective COVID-19 vaccine, some experts suggest an existing vaccine that almost everyone already gets my help.
Now, Carmen and I have looked at the most current news pertaining to vaccines that could possibly be used in the prevention of coronavirus. Many companies across the world are working on these. Dr. Fauci is very hopeful that by the first quarter of 2021, we will have at least one that works best.
There is plenty of evidence that existing vaccines such as polio vaccines protect children against a wide range of infections, not just polio. So it seems worth trying them out against COVID-19.
You know, we know that the oral polio vaccine is safe, cheap, easy to give, and widely available, with more than 1 billion doses produced and used annually in more than 140 countries. This vaccine has nearly eradicated polio worldwide. Now, to be sure, the oral polio vaccine uses a weakened version of the polio virus. What they call the live attenuated vaccines produce a strong and long-lasting immune response, even though they are slower to manufacture than modern vaccines that just, well, use a piece of genetic material from a virus.
But Konstantin Chumakov of the FDA and Dr. Robert Gallo of the Institute of Human Virology at the University of Maryland School of Medicine agree that this would make perfect sense to at least test it to see if it helps against the coronavirus.
Dr. Gallo now officially proposes the use of oral poliovirus vaccine to ameliorate or prevent COVID-19.
Both poliovirus and coronavirus are positive strands RNA viruses. Therefore, it is likely that they may induce and be affected by common innate immunity mechanism.
Possibly, the oral poliovirus vaccine in particular could at least provide temporary protection against coronavirus disease. Not only that, the oral polio vaccine produces herd effects, which you may remember from previous Hey Doc shows, is reached when the majority of a given population, around 70-90%, become immune to an infectious disease, either because they have become infected and recovered or through vaccination. We have also shown on that same program why vaccines may be the only successful herd immunity that we can get in the United States.
In addition to protecting vulnerable individuals, it could also prevent the spread of the new coronavirus by increasing the proportion of unsusceptible individuals.
A good thing is that the risk of complications due to oral polio vaccine is extremely low. Yes, it can cause a polio-like complication, but only in about 1 out of every 3 million doses given, and then mostly in immunocompromised children. Doctors already know that the benefits of vaccination extend beyond the particular germs that are targeted.
And there are other live attenuated viral vaccines. These include the vaccines against measles and smallpox, which have also been associated with pronounced non-specific protective effects against infectious diseases.
This has been demonstrated, for example, in Africa. When the measles vaccine was introduced into the community, the overall mortality in children declined by more than 50%. A reduction that was far larger than anticipated on the basis of the protection against measles deaths alone. The oral polio vaccine is no longer licensed or even available in the United States, but it is still used in some parts of the world. Vaccines in development around the world are in various stages of testing.
And remember that there is a potential treatment available. We have talked about this as well on past shows, and that is ivermectin, which is an inexpensive drug already being used to treat parasitic infections. It has been shown in laboratory to kill coronavirus that causes COVID-19 in less than 48 hours, according to Australian researchers.
Ivermectin has been used widely for decades. By the way, I've heard it pronounced either ivermectin or ivermectin. Carmen, how do you like to pronounce it?
Ivermectin.
Okay, so you pronounce it that way, and I'll pronounce it the other way during the rest of the show. How does that sound?
Sounds fine to me. Potato, potato.
Okay, so pick your choice. It was initially introduced as a veterinary drug in the 1970s, but physicians also prescribe it to treat head lice, scabies, and other infections that are caused by parasites.
According to a report published online in the journal Antiviral Research, the drug quickly prevented replications of SARS-CoV-2. That is just another name for the virus that causes COVID-19.
This study has been peer-reviewed and accepted for publication, although it is not quite yet a definitive version of record.
What the researchers did was infect cells with SARS-CoV-2, then expose them to ivermectin.
So what were the results? Drum roll, please. Not a very good drum roll. Anyway, the researchers showed that a single dose of ivermectin could kill COVID-19 in a Petri dish within 48 hours. This indicated potent antiviral activity, according to Dr. David Jans, Ph.D., a professor of biochemistry and molecular biology at Monash University in Melbourne, and co-author of this particular study.
Even at 24 hours, there was a really significant reduction in the virus. But, of course, experts say more testing is needed to know if it works well in people and if it is safe to use.
Now remember something, no one, and I repeat, no one should try to self-medicate. We are here only to educate. Well, we're also here to entertain, but our main goal and job is to present all the medical news that we feel you, our listeners, should know about. It appears that the main way that ivermectin works is to target a key molecule of our cells. That is thought to help the virus to proliferate.
By stopping this molecule from working, it is thought that the virus will replicate more slowly, and so our immune system will have a better chance to mount the antiviral response and kill the virus.
In other studies, the researchers say the drug has also been shown to work against dengue fever and to limit infections similar to COVID-19, such as West Nile virus. Never heard of West Nile virus? It happens that the West Nile virus is the leading cause of mosquito-borne disease in the continental United States. Yep, right here in the good old USA. It's most commonly spread to people by the bite of an infected mosquito. Most cases occur during mosquito season, which starts in the summer and continues through fall. As yet, there are no vaccines to prevent or medications to treat West Nile virus.
Fortunately, most people infected with West Nile virus do not feel sick. About 1 in 5 people who are infected develop a fever and other symptoms, and only 1 out of 150 infected people develop a serious, sometimes fatal illness.
So what can you do to prevent it? Well, you can prevent getting bitten by mosquitoes. Not always the easiest thing to do. So you should use insect repellent and wear long-sleeved shirts and long pants to prevent mosquito bites.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center.
I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 33 years.
We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just 2 blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care.
Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. Getting back to ivermectin, it is safe even at relatively high doses, as we said. So the next step is more research to find the best dose for fighting COVID-19. Then researchers can begin testing in people. It is important to stress that no one should try to self-medicate with any versions of ivermectin that are for veterinary purposes or even those used for human head lice. The only safe way to get ivermectin is by prescription from your doctor. Her clinic uses the medicine to treat intestinal parasites found in international travelers or immigrants.
Jill Weatherhead, MD, an assistant professor of adult and pediatric infectious disease at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, became interested in this medication as a treatment for COVID-19. Her clinic uses the medicine to treat intestinal parasites found in international travelers or immigrants. The important caveat, says Weatherhead, who reviewed the study but was not involved in the research, is that it was done in a lab. But at this point, any lead will have to be investigated.
What we really need to know is if you can translate that concentration of the drug used in the lab study into human studies and have it be safe. Catherine Selly-Ratke, PhD, a professor of chemistry and biochemistry at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, said that the results are simply promising.
And according to Catherine Selly-Ratke, PhD, a professor of chemistry and biochemistry at the University of Maryland, ivermectin has shown effectiveness against other viruses despite being labeled an antiparasitic drug. So she also feels that ivermectin is worthy of further study.
Well, let's see what else we got here. Okay, here's an article titled, Can Oral Rinses Help Stop the Spread of COVID-19? It just appeared last week in the medical news, although we did talk about mouthwashes early in one of the first radio shows that we had on COVID-19. The researchers concluded that some oral rinses may actually help curb the spread of the virus.
It seems possible, if not reasonable, that decreasing the levels of chest virus, even for a very short period of time, may have an impact on transmission of disease to vulnerable people or to healthcare professionals who routinely work in the upper airway, such as ear, nose, and throat. Surgeons, anesthetists, and dentists, at least according to a co-investigator, Albert Bosch, PhD of the University of Barcelona, Spain.
The study was first published on May 14th. We know that this coronavirus is surrounded by a lipid or fat envelope. Inserted into this biomembrane are the spike glycoproteins required for infection. Now, these are the spikes that give the virus the name coronavirus, since corona in Spanish means crown, and that is what the spikes make the virus look like.
So this lipid biomembrane may be the virus's Achilles heel because based on studies on other similar viruses, the membrane will be susceptible to disruption and affect the demise of the virus.
Interfering with the lipid envelope is a well-known virucidal strategy that has been used in the past against many other coronaviruses. Other studies have also shown that similar viruses with a fat envelope, again including the virus that causes COVID-19, are highly sensitive to 60 to 70% ethanol. And it is this alcohol that causes almost immediate inactivation of the virus.
Previous research suggests that the salivary glands and throat are major sources of coronavirus replication. Furthermore, a high viral load in the mouth may contribute to the spread of disease in early stages of infection.
It's known that the virus is a source of shed virus, especially in early stage disease. Increased levels of virus shedding in the throat or lungs might also be associated with an increase in the, let's say, propensity to infect others. This means that strategies aimed at reducing the number of infective virus particles in mucous membranes may actually help reduce the risk for transmission. And one such strategy is to use oral rinses that target the lipid envelope around SARS-CoV-2. But could these strategies actually work?
To help answer this question, the investigators conducted a literature review that examined several common ingredients in oral rinses, including ethanol, chlorhexidine, cetylpyridinium chloride, hydrogen peroxide, and povidone iodine.
So the virus researchers tested the ability of each of these to disrupt the lipid envelope of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. So let's cut to the chase. Ethanol studies have mainly used higher concentrations of the compound. Few have examined the lower concentrations commonly found in commercially available mouthwashes. The small amount of research that has been conducted with lower ethanol concentrations have been promising. Two in vitro trials yielded positive results.
In 2007, a study concluded that 20% ethanol completely inactivated three enveloped viruses, including the Synbis virus, herpes simplex 1, and vaccinia.
There actually was another study around 2017 that showed that a 30-second exposure to a dilution containing around 34% ethanol completely prevented coronavirus replication.
There is now a real need to perform similar studies under biologically relevant conditions, such as in the mucosa and mouth. In 1995, that's 25 years ago, researchers used 26.9% ethanol plus essential oils against herpes, influenza, rotavirus, and adenovirus in vitro.
Both herpes and influenza were significantly affected, whereas adenovirus and rotavirus, which are not enveloped, were not. This is why many investigators speculated that the oral rinse may alter the viral lipid envelope. So how much do you need for success? Well, a 2010 unpublished follow-up study by the same group showed that a 30-second in vitro exposure to 21.6% alcohol, meaning ethanol in this case, with essential oils led to more than a 99.99% reduction of infectivity of H1N1 influenza.
However, the study showed that oral rinsing had a positive effect, but the studies were small, not blinded, and self-reported. Better studies must be done to prove efficacy and safety.
Now let's talk about chlorhexidine, which also has been shown in vitro to reduce the viral concentration of enveloped viruses.
Given the chlorhexidine formulations can retain their oral antimicrobial activity for up to 12 hours. The researchers note that combining them with ethanol may prove useful for reducing viral load over longer periods.
The other that we mentioned was povidone iodine, which has shown that repeated gargling can reduce incidence of both bacterial and viral infection. Povidone iodine is currently available only in a few Asian countries. In addition, rare allergic reactions have been reported with its use, so much more research has to be done in this regard.
We have also mentioned oral rinsing with hydrogen peroxide. Remember that we had recommended that hydrogen peroxide can be used to clean desks, countertops, and other things. It happens that hydrogen peroxide causes oxygen-free radical-induced disruption of lipid membranes.
But it is still early and no definitive treatments have been recommended yet for the treatment of COVID-19. You may have to return next week for more on the pandemic. I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com, where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. We've come to the end of another Hey Doc show.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.